I feel pride too, because I'm like, wow, this work that we've been doing. And for a while there, it was just me and my board nights and weekends, and that's it, because I was doing full-time interior design and architectural lighting. And I go there and I'm like, I can have this level of impact on something that I do in my spare time. And it's very moving to see how much you're affecting people's lives in a positive way.
This is The Art of Construction with your host, Devin Tilley, and co-host, Kevin Keefe. Devin has built a multi-seven-figure business in the construction industry, selling windows, doors, and hardware over the past 13 years. Devin's passion for helping those around him led him to create the Art of Construction informational platform, a part of which is a fireside chat podcast with industry professionals all focused on how they apply art in their business and construction projects. Grown to an audience of over 100,000, Devin shares his strategies for what he has accomplished and creates insightful conversations with industry leaders. This is The Art of Construction, featuring your host, Devin Tilley, and co-host, Kevin Keefe.
All right, Kevin, we're taking a little bit different angle today than talking about with an architect that's just going to talk about standard design, or a manufacturer that's going to talk about their product. We're going to Nepal with Lindsay Kruger today.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting to hear from somebody that was passionately involved in a project and decided to kind of go at it full time.
So shout out to Tim Zorich, who's a trusted advisor at Mountain View Window and Door that works with Lindsay day-to-day in her design firm. But tonight, we're not talking about hardware and design. We're talking about building houses in Nepal. I'm pumped to hear this story. After I watched the video on her website, she hit me in the heart. So let's go in and tell her story, huh?
Here we go.
What's your favorite beverage?
Coffee.
Coffee.
Any particular type?
Oh, lattes.
There you go.
Well, we're going to talk about that today, but of traveling the world, you probably have to put in some long days and nights to get through all that, right?
Oh my gosh, so many long days and nights. A lot of my destinations are about 27-hour flights combined.
Wow. Well, tell us a favorite place you've traveled.
I would say I'm kind of split between two places, which is odd, but one of my favorites is rural Myanmar, kind of rural, slightly to the central western part of Myanmar. And then my other favorite is Utah. Who doesn't
All
love
right.
Utah?
There you go. Well, I think a lot of our listeners probably have know Utah more than the first one. So give us one story of one of your favorite places.
Well, since probably a lot of listeners have been to Utah, I'll tell you a little bit about my trip to Myanmar. It was just myself and a friend who's also a contractor, actually. Our visas had ended in Nepal, and we had to jump ship and so that we could come back again. And we ended up in rural Myanmar on scooters, like little dirt bikes, driving around all over the countryside looking for hidden temples that no one had ever seen before. I'm sure people have seen them before, but we felt like we were exploring and just driving through the countryside on little motorbikes.
Sounds like you're a bit adventurous.
Maybe a little.
Well, what's your favorite hobby or interest outside the construction arena?
I'd say it's hard to find time to do any hobby outside of work, but I think my favorite thing that I don't get to do often enough is dance. I used to be a swing dancer once upon a
cool.
time. Still get a little time to do that once in a while.
Awesome. Well, we got to know a little bit about Lindsay Kruger. So, Lindsay, I loved your bio. I'm going to start off by reading your bio here, but you may need to help me a little bit because there's some amazing places in here that you're going to be educating me about today. So I'm just going to dive in and just stop me if I mess up some things here. So the bio of the guest, Heart of Gold, until you're up against her in a game of bananagrams. Lindsay is our resident visionary. She founded Nevis after working on the ground in the Solukhumbu.
You got it.
Solukhumbu. Whoa. And Darjeeling districts of Nepal, where she saw firsthand that what folks in undeserved communities need most are things she and the Design Plus building community can offer. Professional assistance in design, construction, and engineering, and access to funding for extremely low-income communities, she has been working in the design industry for the past 12 years and started her business Kruger Design Studio in 2008. In addition, Lindsay has worked on the board of Architecture for Humanity Denver, where she dove into international humanitarian aid projects and served for 4 years as an advocate for RAAP, Denver's Rape Crisis Program. Well, there's the tea the stage. So what's Nevis?
What is Nevis? So Nevis is a nonprofit that I founded about 4 years ago. It's been 4 years, yeah. After working with Architecture for Humanity for several years, we worked on a project that was in Solukhumbu, which is rural mountainous Nepal. And during that project, a bunch of architects, which is the majority of the volunteers for Architecture for Humanity, and some interior designers, designed a school for that area and then did all the fundraising for it. And then we sent over a group of volunteers that I went with to construct the building. And during that time of living in the village and working with the people to build this building that they had so desired for such a long time, and being able to build on their desire and their dedication and be able to accomplish this mission that they had been on for quite some time, I just fell in love with Nepal. I fell in love with the process of being able to assist other people on these endeavors that they're trying to reach. So during that time, I kind of got hooked and then never gave up since then. And I kept going back to Nepal as kind of a freelance volunteer, helping other NGOs, nonprofits, to run their volunteers through building buildings. At the time, what we were working on was earth bag construction. So a lot of people don't really have much background in that, especially not that many in Nepal did. So we went over and we helped them run their volunteers through that. And a couple of contractors from here in Denver also went over with me. And during that time, our minds just built this concept of Nevis. And now today, it's the whole concept behind it is helping families in impoverished communities to be able to improve the safety and health of their home. So today, what that means is completely building new homes, because the earthquakes of 2015 destroyed over 500,000 homes in Nepal. So we've had a lot of work ahead of us just constructing homes from the ground up for the families that lost theirs.
And wow. I think you were mentioning that this Solukhumbu is near Mount Everest, is that right?
It is, yeah. So where we're at now is a village called Damku in Solukhumbu. And Damku is about 35 miles away from base camp for Mount Everest.
So what's the elevation roughly?
It's actually not as bad as you would think. It's only about 6,500 feet because okay. You go up and over and up and over, and then you're kind of going down the valley by the time you get to the village. So it's not too bad.
Awesome. So I want to make sure I'm teeing this up right and I'm setting the stage and understanding this right. So you own a design firm, Kruger Design Studio in Denver. You went there as a humanitarian effort to learn, and then you just got hooked, and you've been ever since building up this nonprofit that it's you're the one leading Nevis as the nonprofit, using the construction architect community to really follow this passion. And I'd say her website has, I saw a video, and she's been showing me her new, all the pictures are worth 1,000 words, and this video just hit me in the heart when you see these people where they're devastated. And I want to hear some stories from you where when I see the video where the guy's literally has the siding and the roofing on his back walking up the mountain to say, like, we may be a bit jaded here about how luxury we have it when we say what we're talking about and our problems to build a construction. So why don't you start by setting the stage? Did I say that right? And what you're doing and where you want to go with this thing? And I want to get into some stories because I'm really passionate about seeing what you're doing here.
Yeah, you got all of that correct. And I agree with you. It kind of puts into perspective our frustrations that we feel here in the States doing construction and design. You know, there's things that are frustrating about it. And then when you go over there and you see that a lot of the times, there's only certain seasons, there's probably, I would estimate, about 3 to 4 months of the year where we can actually get the materials over the mountains into the village. So if we're needing to get anything there that we didn't queue up during that time, people have to bring it in on their back. And it's, oh my gosh, it's 14 miles, 13 miles from the nearest road. So you're bringing it, basically imagine the same kind of hiking trail that you'd be going like up a 14er out here. Someone's carrying the roofing material on their back for that. Usually we're good enough to get the concrete in on the tractor during the shoulder seasons, but sometimes people are carrying the other materials on their backs. Or we do have access to mules sometimes, so some of our materials are coming in on mules. But in general, that's kind of the art of it, is being able to get as much of your materials in on these tractors when they're able to go and able to actually make it over the pass without getting stuck. They get a lot of rain there, so that's why most of the year you can't even bring anything over. So, but that's kind of the trick, is getting your materials, getting these tractors so loaded up that you're saving on cost, because that, when you start paying for porters bringing things over, or mules bringing things over, or not bringing enough on your tractor over at one time, that's when the cost starts to go up. But that's how we've kept it so low over time, is that's why we can build a house for just over $1,200 for an entire house. So
wow. So did you say $1,200 to build a house?
Yep, $1,250.
$1,250. And yes, you have to get it 14 miles one way to get stuff there?
Yeah, it's between 12 and 14. Yeah.
What kind of houses are you building for that?
They're true to the vernacular architecture of rural Nepal. They're usually stone construction with wood windows and doors. They have a corrugated tin roof and a concrete foundation and concrete ring beam on the top. And depending on the... We let the families do kind of the design, as long as it fits within the seismic construction code that Nepal has set forth after a lot of research with different engineering firms. So if the family can follow the construction guidelines, which we teach them how to do that, then they are allowed to design it. So because we don't want a bunch of things that look all exactly the same, that would be hindering to them. It would reduce their dignity and pride in their own home. So they design it themselves. So some of them are a little bit different. Some of them have concrete columns at the corners, but most of them are stone with a concrete foundation and concrete ring beam on the top.
So if they're designing their own house, then there must be some kind of education or how does that work on the front end of, I'm looking at this picture of this smiling couple with their coffee in front of their house. Like, how did they go to school, or how did their house come to fruition?
Well, that's kind of one of the major things that we bring to the table as an organization, is the first thing every single family does when they join the program is they start in construction workshops. So we have Nepali engineers coming over, teaching them in their own language, drawing pictures, showing them guidelines and sections and, you know, wall sections and different things to show them how this is different from what they had done in the past. Because honestly, all of these families have been terrified to even begin rebuilding their homes because they don't want to build the same thing. Mm-hmm. They don't want their home to fall in on their family going forward if they were to tragically have another earthquake. So they've been waiting for someone to help with this, because they don't know how to access this, where this information is at. So that's the first thing that we do, is we start with workshops. They get a background on it. They take notes. They get little packages of the different types of construction that we will work with them on, so that it's following code. And that's how they begin the very first stages of the program.
And how big are these typically? What's the size, just dimensionally?
They're all a little bit different, but the average one, like the one that this couple is sitting in front of on our website, is about 14 by 22
okay.
feet. So.
And before they get their house, where are they living?
Every single person is living in what I don't like to, this sounds derogatory, but in basically a shanty. I don't know, I have another word for it, to be honest, but it's basically whatever they can string together. Sometimes people have access to a tarp. Some people have a couple of sheets of corrugated tin from something else, from their old house or whatever, and they'll rig up like a little tent, basically, and they're all living inside these little tents and kind of sleeping on the ground. But when it rains, it's just miserable. Their tents are filling with water. Or as one family described to me, their tarp on the top would create a pool, you know, on the top, and then suddenly just spill the whole pool of water inside the house in the middle of the night, and it's a pretty miserable situation, so they're really excited when they get to join the program.
Yeah, that happened to me once as a kid when we went camping and the tent, you know, the water came in. But we had somewhere to go.
Yeah,
right.
When the water came in, that's a big difference. Then the water comes in and you just grin and bear it. So I'm curious to go back to the 1250 because I'm just intrigued. That number just keeps jumping in my head. Is like that truly the construction cost, or is there a team behind that that's helping? You know, with the movement to make that all happen?
Exactly. It's a collaborative process. So all of our projects are about a 50-50 collaboration with the families. Sometimes they even bring 60% to the table. So basically, we take account of everything that they can bring to the table and we sort of put a number to it. So if they have stones that they're reclaiming from their old house, or they're going and quarrying their own stone from the mountain, which is really interesting, or they're bringing any wood that they could salvage from their own home, or they're going and collecting wood from the community forest, we add all that up until we figure out how much they've brought to the table. And generally, it's about a 50-50 relationship. So they're bringing physical labor. Sometimes they're bringing some skilled labor. Some of their family members are trained in construction, or even if they're not, they're able to be on site and be helping dig the mud and collect things and bring it to the site. And so that's how we can get it down to $1,250, is that they are kind of bringing a lot to the table as well.
Wow.
And then how does it work in an area that you've got new construction happening? For like this couple that we're looking at on the website, they're getting their home built, and then I'm sure some of their neighbors are in a position where they're still dealing with that tent with the water that could cave in. I mean, is there animosity? Is there excitement for the other people, even though they don't have yet? Or how does that all kind of work into play?
This is the worst part of the program for me personally, because I have to be that bearer of bad news and our staff over in Nepal, that, you know, you didn't get into the program yet in this phase, which has been a really hard job for us to do. It's very miserable to tell people that they have to wait until the next season of construction. But, you know, it's a really wonderful community, and they help each other. And I don't see a lot of animosity, to be honest. They believe in us, and they have faith that we're going to keep coming back until everyone's inside a safe home. So I'm sure behind the scenes, you know, there's probably a little bit of hard feelings. But so far, people have been really great. And the other thing that's good about that is the people who haven't been selected yet for the program, which I can explain how that works too if you want, they lend their hands to their neighbors, kind of like a barn building type of situation, where they're coming over and helping this family build their house. And the families are tracking it, and they're keeping track, like, my neighbor over here, you know, came for 3 days and helped me do this. And then when it's their turn, they know that they've put that investment in and that their neighbors are going to come back and help them when it's their turn to build. So it kind of has a positive effect as well.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to read a paragraph that really jumped out at me as you're building a new website, right? This way you gave me into your,
right.
It's, we're in the same thing. We're actually, hopefully Thursday, I don't know, we're launching a new website too, and I can feel your, that's an involvement, right?
Right.
So the paragraph I'm going to read, and I have a couple of points that I wanted to, from me doing my due diligence for you to talk about. So a well-built home is more than a place to grow your family. It is a major asset, collateral, and bargaining chip toward a brighter future. And I want to read that there because that's kind of what you're talking about, is, you know, giving you a get. And I'm sitting here looking at this couple, like they're so well dressed, and you can tell they truly care about their presentation and their culture. What would be your take to that? I commend you for saying, you know, yeah, what keeps you up at night? It's obviously who gets the homes and who doesn't. But that's where you're here telling your story on the Art of Construction, and that's hopefully what we can give back to you, is to say this could be a platform to maybe some more resources come to help what you're doing. So can you elaborate on any stories or, you know, they all look so well groomed in a place where their tent could be caving in tonight.
Yeah, I mean, that's really true. And when they know that we're coming to see the finished product of their house, and they know we always bring our cameras, of course. They prep for it. They're really proud of what they've achieved. And you're right, the people in the photos are, they're putting on their Sunday best, as we would call it, and really proud of the work that they've done. And they're really excited for the homes that they have and to move out of the tent shelter and into something wonderful. So, yeah, I mean, you're picking up exactly the vibe of how people feel about being a part of our program. So
tell me the story of the first home that you got this going, and now it's your Nevis and you got it going, and you came in the first house that you saw that you created to help happen. Tell me what that was like.
Oh my gosh. I'll tell you this. Crying at work was never an option for me before in architecture and design, but crying at work happens quite often in this.
I can only imagine.
Yeah, I mean, it's when you.
I'd be crying.
Yeah,
I mean,
no,
I can, like, from the video, it just hit me in the heart. Like to take someone who's living in a shanty to you help them make a house their home, and it may be 14 by 22, but that's a mansion to them when the other guy's in a tent. So it's all relative. Like, that's why I want to just have you help us paint that picture. Cause one of the podcast things of my values of the art of construction is to say, you know, get into their heart, you hit them in the heart, and then you learn from their mind, you'll get into their soul. And that's what, you know, the right things, cause we're all distracted, right, Kevin? There's plenty of windows.
There's
always this and
things
that,
happening, but
it puts it into perspective.
It really does, and it also kind of focuses on things that we take for granted that are really important. Here, they don't have a lot in our scheme of a value system or structure, and yet for them, it's really important to have a home that they can rely on, which really isn't that different than us in a lot of ways, but we get so focused on a lot of the other things, and yet we can take some of this for granted. And for them, it's just you know, basic taking pride in your home and your village and your culture and that kind of thing. And you guys are being able to bring it to them in a way that helps them out a lot. So,
yeah, it's been pretty amazing. I mean, if you hang out with me for a while, you'll see that I don't think this is about me in any way. It really isn't. I mean, you might see my face on the website one time, but that's only because I have to put it on there.
Right.
But when I go there, though, and I see the first family or I see that first round of families, I feel pride too, because I'm like, wow, this work that we've been doing. And for a while there, it was just me and my board nights and weekends, and that's it, because I was doing full-time interior design and architectural lighting. And I go there and I'm like, I can have this level of impact on something that I do in my spare time. And it's very moving to see how much you're affecting people's lives in a positive way just by putting in that extra effort, because you know it matters to them.
Yeah. I'm curious on technology, because I'm assuming you don't just go to your Outlook and email these guys in the picture on how's it coming along, you know, how does the communication, like we say about, you know, we have all these technology tools in our day-to-day world in the art of construction. How do you communicate the art of construction to these guys from the technology perspective?
That's a much more complicated process, I would say, or much simpler process, so depending on which angle you look at it from. But interestingly, in all of rural Asia, for the most part, everybody has a cell phone. Well, not everybody, but there are cell phones, and people use cell phones. They don't always work. Mine doesn't work up there, but we have a ground manager that lives in the village who we can contact via his cell phone. And then if he takes that 12, 14-mile hike, we're always debating how far it is, because we all disagree on how far it is. Somewhere in there, though. He hikes over every so often that over the divide and goes down and gets to a place where he has internet. And that's how we send, like, construction document type things and agreements. And the families all sign contracts and different kinds of agreements. So that's how we communicate things like documents that we have to have. But generally, we have to actually go there to get any real messages or any real work accomplished. But we have a ground partner that lives in Nepal and helps us on the construction side. So they do a lot of the communicating as well. So we communicate with them. They send the messages over the mountain. So-and-so is flying in to the little teeny tiny airport, and he'll deliver a message to the guy at the hotel. And then the guy at the hotel will tell some porter that's headed over with some materials, and eventually the messages get there.
This is maybe a really wrong question, but I'm just curious to say, like, why do they live where they live when it's 14 miles away from that? Like, is it like, I don't have the firsthand experience of traveling there like you have. Do like, I'm jaded. Grew up in South Dakota, and I've went to the beach a few times, but I haven't, you know, when I go to the Mexico resort, kind of see it going there, Jamaica on a cruise, and you kind of see that, but I haven't lived in it. So how does that work? Like, why do you have to go 14 hours to your shanty instead of just being the town?
Sure. I think that's a question that anybody would ask, or that we've all asked ourselves. And it honestly has to do with the same thing as to why people remain living in a lot of rural areas here as well, is they own that land. Like, that's their family heritage land. That's the land that they own. They're all subsistence farmers. So they have, hopefully, if they're lucky, enough land that they grow vegetables and grains on it. And that's what supports their family and keeps them alive. So if they can't sell that, or if they don't want to sell that, they wouldn't have anything to move to the city. They wouldn't have any resources, you know?
So the 12 to 14 hours going back the other way, they're hopefully, that's the, when the video and it showed the crop on their back, they're bringing that to hopefully get a few dollars to build their.
Exactly. So that's kind of, the level of income there is so low. We do a lot of survey work, and that's how we pick who's most in need and needs to go first in the phases to build their house. And most of these families are earning between $50 and $100 a month for the whole family. And that's to buy rice and sugar and a few of the things that you don't grow on your land.
Yeah, and the lessons learned at every level, you have the same problem. You know, it's just never enough. Two things you don't have enough of, time and money. So can you make it work on $50? That's you better figure it out, right? Because that's kind of where it is.
It's not easy.
And same back as we're trying to grow our business here day to day, is that you better have some analytics and surveys like you're talking about to help with the impossible challenge. If it's just you're winging it to go over there and fly in and say, I'm going to select this family over this family, you better figure out a few systems to build a for-profit or non-profit company, whatever it may be, right?
Exactly. We collect all the data, and then we have these categories. So basically, if you can imagine like a family of six that's living outside and has really small children, going to be building before, say, a family that has older children that are going off to school and are less at risk of becoming sick from living in their tent. So, but even that is like, these families are so similar and they're all suffering, and it's hard to make that line in the sand and tell them that and explain that. It's really hard, but
yeah, it doesn't make it easy, but it makes it more fair. If you have something, you have to have some kind of rule to build from.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And we're hoping to reach everybody, so those lines will all disappear sooner.
You know, you talked earlier about the codes and everything, and since this area was hit so hard by the earthquakes in 2015, what kinds of changes have come across? Because obviously it has to be within that price range. It has to be some simple, you know, tactics, but obviously some things that are going to help. So what kinds of things are employed to help keep those structures in place going forward if an earthquake were to hit again?
Okay, so like, what's the difference between their former version? Concrete. Okay. Honestly, there was no concrete there before. They didn't build with concrete at all. So the foundation of their homes is much different than the previous foundation would have been. The footer is much bigger and stronger. Gotcha. And there's, well, I should say concrete and rebar. So there's two different dimensions of steel rebar in both the foundation and the ring beam on the top. So that's tying the structure together laterally. Am I saying that right? So that it's a lot stronger than their previous forms, which honestly just crumbled in the earthquakes because there wasn't really a lot of strength to the structure before, with no steel and no concrete involved.
That's fascinating, because we just launched another podcast called System Build Lifestyle. And the first episode, and it's all a podcast all dedicated to offsite construction. And the episode one was with Amvic Insulated Concrete Forms, because that's something that just hit me when you're talking. It's like it'd be easier to put a piece of foam on your back than bags of concrete to help minimize that together. And I think that's something that all of us, you know, if you give and you will get, all of us in the art of construction world, we have to think how we can work smarter and not harder. And it's not always about just how to make more profit on a project. Maybe someday you put on a different hat to say, hey, this might be a product or a solution for what you're doing to, it sounds like concrete is your secret sauce and all projects are come from a great foundation. We look at this and say maybe an insulated concrete form, or it sounds like that tractor and getting bags of concrete up there is a secret sauce to what you're doing as we learn and have these conversations together. So I'd be happy to make those introductions, and as we all work together to say that's what it's all about on the art of construction, to give and you will get. And it sounds like you've gotten a lot from Nevis and outside of you running your design firm, right?
Yeah, I mean, most definitely I've gotten a lot out of it. And I think that's kind of our big thing, is we work with a lot of contractors and different design professionals, mostly in Colorado, who they give us their concepts, their ideas, and they also, I think, get a lot back by supporting Nevis and what we do. Some firms have, you know, they're achieving a lot of success here in town, and, you know, Denver's booming and people are doing great work and they're very proud of everything that they've accomplished. So we've had a lot of firms that have decided to sponsor a family, and then they fully sponsor a family building their home. Hmm. And beyond, you know, just sponsoring, and they also are bringing ideas to the table of, you know, how we can accomplish this work. So it's been really neat having these partnerships. And we see ourselves as an organization where we want to be a family with our base, our followers, which is so far a very small base. We only have between about 300 and 350 followers, that they create the whole thing, and they've made Nevis what it is, and they've made it so that we could reach all of these people. And we like having those people be able to be part of the process and going forward, what kind of work are we going to do? What kind of projects? We have these different ideas. What do they see as being the imperative? And that's kind of how we see ourselves, as more of a family.
Awesome. So I'm curious, just give me a little bit more information. If I'm intrigued, tell me what it means to sponsor a family.
So it's the same number, straightforward, $1,250, and you're helping a whole family rebuild their home. And so far to date, we've had kind of an exchange program where if a family gets sponsored by one person or one firm, they have written a letter to the firm telling them what that meant to them in the end, when they're done building their house, how they were affected. So that's kind of, I know it's simple, but I think to hear directly from the mouths of the person that you're helping is so
totally
meaningful.
I mean, there's a lot of suppliers like me in my day-to-day world. I own a window and door company. So like where I'm thinking about this is saying, maybe this is something Mountain Window and Door should do from a go-giver mentality of, like, from a marketing perspective, to say, you know, we could have that letter on the wall to say we used enough profit dollars this year to help support a family build their house. And that's what we're in the business in the supply industry, is to help people make their house a home. So that's something that I like how you're not coming in and just selling what you're doing. Like, I can truly tell, like, this is your passion and your heart is fully involved. And that's what we're all about on the Art of Construction, is that's what we want to help each other, but not from a what's in it for me's perspective, from a go-giver perspective. And that's hard sometimes. And that's what hopefully this podcast can be a resource for you to say, sometimes step out of the box and think about how hard you really have it. Like, what's really important? How do you truly grow your business? And that's what we're really trying when we say, everyone asks me, well, why do you do this podcast? What? I said, it's for contractors and architects to grow their business. And I stop. And then I say, how do I develop a relationship with you and say, what makes it tick? Because I passionately say, hey, I'm going to help you get some more houses next year. And
we would love that.
And that's what I hope the Art of Construction does. but then maybe a few more people, we can build our tribe together to make us live a better life, not just from a what's in our pocket, but how big is our heart? As the Grinch grew his heart three times that day. And that's what I love about these types of stories. So in closing, if there's one thing you want our listening audience from the Art of Construction to hear, to say, go check out the website. We'll put all this stuff in the show notes. What is that one thing for your call to action to help them grow their business first off from you adding a design, but then also a call to action to say if you want to get involved with your company?
Sure. Well, you know, I think as construction, architecture, design professionals, we all make a really big impact on the city where we're working or the country where we're working. We shape it. We make it what it is. And that's really beautiful, and I think it's very fundamental to us as human beings. The work that we're doing is very innate, and I think that's a beautiful thing, and we're all really lucky to be able to do that. But I think if there's one thing that I would say is to remember that there's a bigger picture out there, and by doing relatively small things, we can have a huge impact on people who are really in need, and that is a beautiful thing too, and it also shapes our whole world. So I think we would be lucky to be able to do something like that. And as far as working with Nevis to accomplish something like that, we would love to have you. We would that's kind of our whole mission, is to be able to work together with construction and architecture professionals and reach these marginalized families to help them. And on our new website, which hopefully will be launched by the time this airs, there's a whole section on social responsibility for firms and how you can work with us and how we'll promote you in reverse, so that we're both promoting each other and getting good work done. And I think it really affects your clients. The clients, for me, I worked always in residential. So when people are building their dream home, it's huge for them and it's really meaningful. But when I've had a few firms like Vessel Brand Kitchens and Jones Construction and 186 Lighting, and they work with us and their clients see it, and their client then feels like their action of building their own home is something bigger than just that one home in Denver or in Colorado or wherever it is.
Lindsay, I commend you. It's really awesome that you went and chased this, from going on a trip to all this work you put in. So hopefully this story is something that you can help to grow your business in all the meaningful ways. And we commend you at the Art of Construction. We're big fans.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
And I thought I was a big deal to climb a 14er in Colorado.
Pretty amazing when you think about the fact that day to day we're, you know, trying to do our everyday activity in terms of getting product to job sites, and we're dealing with logistics. And, you know, like today it's snowing here in Denver a little bit and causing some issues on the roads. Here you've got a 3-month window during the year to get materials in, you know, from a logistics standpoint on a mechanic basis, versus the rest of the year, you got to bring it in by hiking that 14er with carrying the materials on your back. I mean, unbelievable.
So Tribe, that's what we love to have, these different angles, where sometimes people say, why would you have them in the Art of Construction? They're not talking. This truly is the Art of Construction, but also a reality check. Like sometimes you have to have a gut check when you're saying how hard we have it on logistics or building materials or construction methods. And, you know, when Lindsay had to go from deciding what, you know, what light fixtures and hardware to put in people's beautiful homes to who she selects to get a home.
Yeah. When you think about the fact that, you know, 2.5 years, 3 years ago, whatever the time frame was exactly, that most of this village was destroyed through earthquake or by earthquake, that now they're having to rebuild everything through this process. Pretty amazing.
But take those lessons learned that we talked about, where she's saying, like, she has a survey system and building this team of people from her community in Denver that are getting behind her. Like, a movement all starts with people that are behind you. And though she doesn't have huge in numbers, she has something that's inspirational and a true need. When someone's going from a shanty to, at best, they have a tarp, to now having a place with a true roof over their head. And for $1,250 that she's building change like that, like that's, that there is a nonprofit that I want to get behind. Because there's a lot of them out there where you hear these stories, and in the news, you can be in the news a lot of different ways these days, and just treat people the way you want to be treated. If you're going to treat a movement, like, it's not that she should not get rewarded. She should get definitely rewarded for her efforts, but you hear about certain nonprofits where the owners are pulling in hundreds of millions of dollars. That's where hopefully the podcasting world and a movement like the Art of Construction Tribe can be a place to take somebody that's working their tail off. And, you know, the story she told me on the way in here, she was a couple minutes late because we got ice storms here in Colorado, but she sold everything and went all in on this deal to where to come tell her story here for the Art of Construction. She had to borrow a friend's car that then the heating wasn't working. So she was coming down the interstate with she's behind this, and I'm behind her.
Yeah, she's driving over here with the windows rolled down with 20-degree weather to get here to be able to tell the story. Unreal. And then the other thing that's just amazing to me is how much of her nonprofit is backed by people here in Denver. I mean, for those listening, I mean, think about how you could get involved, whether it's sponsoring a specific family. Go to the website. We'll have notes on the show page, on the show notes page, in terms of providing that information. But take a look, see what you think, and you know, there's, I'm sure, a number of different ways that you can get involved to help help this process along.
And another big takeaway for me, Tribe, is that I may have been a little bit too salesy at times, and I'm just going to leave a story for you guys to think about. As I was in negotiations to buy the company I bought, and the gentleman I ended up buying the business from, he said, "Devin, you're just trying too hard." He's like, "Not that you're this guy, but you want it so bad." He's like, "Have you ever been to the bar and there's like all the guys, you know, you're going to the bar, all the single guys?" And he's like, "There's the guy in the corner that has the gold chains and the sideways hat, and he's that guy. And he's the desperate dog at the bar. Don't be that guy."
Yeah, right.
And that's what I loved about meeting Lindsay. She was never selling what she was doing. Tim never sold "you got to have Lindsay" from a sales, "give me money to her charity." It was, "watch this video." It's like an inspirational story. And so truly, storytelling is story selling. And she was not salesy at all. So, man, I commend you, Lindsay. We're behind you and what you're doing. The new website, we'll behind that in the show notes. So check that out. And if you're intrigued, get involved. The Art of Construction is your informational platform to help you, contractors and architects, grow your business, but not just from that traditional business model about financial metrics. Man, the world's changing, and it's all about networks and platforms. So here's another network to get involved in, and hey, maybe you're building materials, maybe you're designs, maybe you just want to write a check and get a letter. But Families in Nepal is a resource for you to help you grow your business. Hey Tribe, we have a special event I want to tell you about. Robert Lindley came into the studio, who was previously on the SBL podcast, and we had a chat about his new construction summit held here in Colorado, where we're making changes. Rob, how cool is it from when we have an interview on a podcast to where then we start working together to where I learned about the Colorado New Construction Summit? And I'm so honored to say here as the Art of Construction to be affiliate for this event. So tell us, Robert Lindley, what the Colorado New Construction Summit's all about.
Well, first off, Devin, thanks for supporting the event. It's going to be a great time. The whole focus of the event is to bring realtors, builders, and lenders together to help create more inventory and solve Denver's housing crisis.
It's definitely a problem we got to get in front of here. And all of us, day-to-day, windows and doors, title work, our customers as builders, we're so busy working on all this stuff. We got to work smarter, not harder, and solve this problem, right?
Indeed. And when you bring all these different participants together, right, you can kind of create your network and your ecosystem, it actually creates more inventory. Last year, as evidenced by the power of this event, we created 10 new homes as a result of people coming together.
Wow, that's incredible. So how do you get involved? How do you come to it?
Well, if you go to conewconsummit.com, you can register there. The event's free for the attendees. If you're interested in sponsoring, there's also sponsorship information there as well. We do still have some sponsorship opportunities, so check it out. We'll see you there on the 10th.
Awesome. So all the details are on the website, conewconstructionsummit.com. You'll learn all about it and want to get involved April 10th from 12:30 to 6:30 to see you there.
We'll see you there.